This program is intended for individuals who are blind or are unable to read physical print and is brought to you by CABVI's Audio Information Services team.
This is a reading on behalf of Radio Reading Services of the Cincinnati Association for the Blind and Visually Impaired of ESPN.com news articles. And we'll begin with this Friday, April 26th. We'll begin with when Josh Harris purchased the Washington Commanders last summer. One of the first calls he made was to Darryl Green, a player he grew up cheering for during the organization's heyday. So it's no surprise that Harris made Green the first player whose jersey he wanted to retire. Green will become the fifth player in franchise history to have his number retired. The Commanders announced Thursday joining Sammy Baugh, Bobby Mitchell, Sonny Jurgensen, and Sean Taylor. Green wore number 28 and played 20 seasons in the NFL, all with Washington. "It means a ton to me," Green said. "I never thought about this, never dreamed about it, never asked about it, whatever. But when it was spoken to me, it blew me away. It caught me. It touched something down on the inside of me that I didn't know was there. So now I'm very humbled by this, but this is huge. This is a big deal, and I'm grateful for that. And I'm that guy that played the whole career here, wasn't chasing the money and stuff, and it just kind of, in many ways, it just validated I made the right decision." Green, who was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 2008, his first year of eligibility, owns multiple NFL records, including most games played by a defender, 295, and most consecutive seasons with an interception, 19. Green, 5'9", and always considered one of the NFL's fastest players during his career, was named an Associated Press All-Pro 3 times and a Pro Bowler 7 times. He played on 2 Super Bowl championship teams. "You all said, man, he's fast, but I could cover," Green said at a media gathering in October. "I got in the Hall of Fame because I could cover. Plus, I was fast." Washington informed Green of the latest honor while he was at the Commander's facility to film a public service announcement. After he read his part, he was asked to read another line that mentioned the team retiring his jersey. "There will be a ceremony honoring Green at one of Washington's home games during this season. It knocked me," he said. "The stuff is just icing on top of icing on top of icing on the cake. Nobody in Washington has worn his number 28 since he stopped playing after the 2002 season. Darryl Green's legacy transcends the boundaries of the football field," Harris said in a statement. "Through his remarkable career, Green embodied the values of excellence, perseverance, sportsmanship on and off the field. Retiring Darryl Green's jersey symbolizes our commitment to preserving the rich history and tradition of our franchise." Green will announce the team's first of 2 second-round picks at the NFL draft. He did that. Quarterback Jaden Rashada joining Georgia after leaving Arizona State. Quarterback Jaden Rashada is committed to play for Georgia after spending 1 season at Arizona State, according to his agent. Rashada will join the Bulldogs after appearing in 3 games for the Sun Devils last season, passing for 485 yards with 4 touchdowns and 3 interceptions. ESPN's number 31 overall recruit in the 2023 class. He has 4 years of eligibility left, and the Timberwolves' Naz Reid wins the NBA Sixth Man of the Year. Minnesota forward Naz Reid was named the 2023-24 NBA Sixth Man of the Year on on Wednesday night, becoming the first Timberwolf player to win the award. Reed, 24, averaged career highs of 13.5 points, 5.2 rebounds to help Minnesota finish with the second-best record in franchise history, 56-26. He also became the third undrafted player to win the award, along with John Starks, 97, and Darrell Armstrong, 99. Blessed to be in this situation, Reed, one of six players to win the award before the age of 25, said in an interview on TNT. It's special. It's one of a kind, something you obviously dream of, especially at the highest level. They've seen me work since day one. I think just being with me, that's super special. Reed just edged out Sacramento Kings guard Malik Monk, who finished second. Reed and Monk had the same number of second place, 39, and third place votes, 10, with 10-point difference, 352 to 342, coming down to Reed getting 45 first place votes compared to 43 for Monk. According to NBA Communications, the 10-point difference between Reed and Monk was the smallest margin in the NBA Sixth Man of the Year balloting under the current voting format. The other finalist, Milwaukee Bucks forward Bobby Portis, was a distant third. Monk, 26, averaged 15.4 points and 5.1 assists, both career highs this season, playing alongside college teammate De'Aaron Fox, and helped power Sacramento to 46 wins and its second consecutive winning season. Now the next story, when Cincinnati Reds shortstop Ellie De La Cruz burst into the scene a season ago, his every move became an instant highlight reel. He helped re-energize a fan base starving for a winner by displaying a rare combination of power and speed while making Reds games must-see TV in the process. After all, who else can lead the league in sprint speed, hit a ball 119.2 miles per hour, and throw it 97.9 miles per hour across the infield? But for all the sizzle that came with a debut season that vaulted the Reds into postseason contention, De La Cruz's final numbers, a 235, 300, 410 slash line, didn't quite live up to the hype, and his team finished two games out of the National League's final playoff spot. We were just one game away the final weekend, second baseman Jonathan India said. It stung us. We could have been the Diamondbacks. It sat with me all off season. I hate losing more than I like winning. This year, the focus in Cincinnati is about turning all of that flash into results that will have the Reds playing postseason baseball for the first time since 2020. And it, of course, begins with their budding superstar. It's definitely got more intense and lively when we started winning, outfielder Spencer Steer said. It all started with Ellie getting called up, running off 12 straight. It just shows the team wants a winning baseball team. They deserve one. It's been a while. After an offseason of hard work, which included time spent honing his hitting with former Major Leaguer Fernando Tatis Sr., De La Cruz is providing star-level production for a team with the NFL's fifth-best record. Sure, he'll still show up in the SportsCenter top 10 plenty this season, but what has the Reds excited is his early showing at the plate. In 23 games, he has a 313, 412, 651 slash line that adds up to the fourth best OPS in MLB at 1.063. Perhaps most encouraging is that he has managed to cut his strikeout rate and nearly double his walk rate while not sacrificing that game-changing combination of power and speed. And all of this has come just months after his 22nd birthday. way, way, way ahead of probably 99% of players his age that have had the experience level he has, Reds manager David Bell said. It's incredible what he's doing. He's going to be developing for years to come, and for him to handle himself the way he does with a lot of attention, we could not be happier. But what he's doing every day to get better, instead of trying to change De La Cruz's approach to rush the process, the club cited time and experience as his major needs and encouraged him to continue being himself in his development. They saw a player willing to learn and weren't surprised when he connected with Tatis Sr. on his own in a search for some guidance. Tatis has worked with players in the past, most notably reigning National League MVP Ronald Acuna Jr., and it's his simple message that De La Cruz credits for his early production at the plate. Be in control, De La Cruz says. Control yourself. He gave me a lot of advice. I learned a lot from him. De La Cruz indicated he wants to make the strike zone a little smaller for the opposing pitcher. And in the early going, he has reduced his strikeout-to-walk rate in half from his debut season. He's working so hard this spring, India said. He wants to be consistent. He wants to be a superstar. He has the ability. We all see that. But for the Reds to finish the season where they want to, they know that it's about getting performance from the players around De La Cruz as well. Something the organization opened its wallets to address this offseason while also leaning into the exciting play of their young core to sell veterans on coming to Cincinnati. The whole city was on fire for this team. They play hard, it's fast, physical baseball. It was very evident in the city was falling in love with this team, reliever Brent Suter said. I told my wife this was already number one on my free agent list, and now it's by far number one. This is a fun team. I was very evident from the other side. The bond kept getting stronger and stronger here. Keeping that close-knit feeling while integrating veteran additions starts with De La Cruz running mate on the left side of the field. The biggest splash of Cincinnati's winter came when Jaimer Candelario joined the Reds on a 3-year, $45 million contract. The third baseman is a ready-made mentor in a young clubhouse as a former top prospect who finally came into his own the past few seasons and has made connecting with De La Cruz a priority. He likes to listen. He's a learner. You have to give him time. Playing every single day in the big leagues is going to allow him to get better. That mix of needing time to mature while also being counted on to perform at the highest level is a common feeling in a Reds clubhouse that features three players who finished in the top seven of National League Rookie of the Year voting a season ago, with Steer and Matt McClain joining De La Cruz. We're not afraid to make mistakes, Steer said. We're going to go out and play fearlessly. That mindset energized the franchise at the major league level a year ago, fueled the front office during the offseason. If the players who embodies it, Ellie De La Cruz, produces, could have the Reds playing in October. Dusty Baker wins Baseball Digest Lifetime Achievement Award. Dusty Baker has won the fourth Lifetime Achievement Award presented by the Baseball Digest. The beloved Baker retired following the 2023 season after spending 56 years in the majors as a player, a coach, and a manager. He was honored Thursday with an annual distinction that recognizes a living individual whose career has been spent in and around Major League Baseball and who has made significant contributions to the game. Willie Mays won the inaugural award in 2021, followed by Vin Scully in 2022 and Joe Torre last year. Receiving this award is a tremendous honor, Baker said in a news release. I never thought that I'd be in the class of those people that received this award. I know that my late mom and dad would be proud of me. This is really special. The 76-year-old Baker broke into the big leagues as a teenager with the Atlanta Braves in 1968 and played 19 seasons. He made two All-Star teams, won two Silver Slugger Awards, and earned a Gold Glove in the outfield. He was the 1977 NL Championship Series MVP and finished fourth in 1980 NL MVP voting before helping Los Angeles Dodgers win the 1981 World Series. Following his playing career, he was a coach for the San Francisco Giants from 1988 to 92 and then became their manager in 1993. Dusty Baker won the first of his three National League Manager of the Year awards with the Giants that season and spent 26 years as a big league skipper, also guiding Chicago Cubs, Cincinnati Reds, Washington Nationals, and Houston Astros. Baker took all those teams to the playoffs. Three pennants, he won 10 division crowns, three pennants, finally a World Series championship in 2022 with the Astros. He ranked seventh on the career list with 2,183 wins and is the only manager in Major League history to lead five franchises to division titles. He returned to the Giants as a special advisor to baseball operations this year. On behalf of Major League Baseball, I'm honored to congratulate Dusty Baker as the 2024 recipient of Baseball Digest Lifetime Achievement Award. He joins an incredible club, said Commissioner Rob Manfred. Dusty represents leadership, goodwill, and winning baseball. There was earlier this week, a sparse afternoon crowd at Angel Stadium gathered enough voices to produce a surprisingly loud safe chant as Wednesday's contest neared its conclusion, hoping to prolong a game that still seemed undecided. Replay review of initial out on Joe Adell's attempt to steal a second base, which would have put the tying run in scoring position with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, was not overturned. The Los Angeles Angels' late comeback hopes had fallen just short. They have sort of 6-5 loss to the visiting Baltimore Orioles, their sixth defeat in seven games. I was in there, Adell said. The call goes our way. We have Rengifo up with a runner on second. We're ready to tie that game. The Angels, seeking their first series win since the start of April, trailed 6-0 midway through the sixth, but had cut the deficit to 2 by the time Oriole closer Craig Kimbrell took the mound for the ninth inning. A two-base error and run-scoring ground out made it a one-run game with two outs. Then Adell worked a full-count walk, took off for second, the ensuing pitch from Kimbrell, who is notoriously slow in his delivery to the plate. At least one camera angle appeared to show Adell's right foot touching the edge of second base before Henderson's glove touched the top of his right leg. But second base umpire Nick Lentz called him out. The Angels challenged, and there was a long delay. We're all looking at the picture. We're watching the video, Adell said. Where my foot hit and where I got tagged were two totally different spots. But the umpire reviewing replay at Major League Baseball's headquarters in Manhattan, New York, in this case, Carlos Torres, disagreed. He ruled the call stands, which means that there was not enough evidence to overturn it. After reviewing all relevant angles, the replay official could not definitely determine the runner touched second base prior to the fielder applying the tag. Angels manager Ron Washington said he was very surprised by the call. Mike Trout, who hit his major league leading 10th home run while hitting leadoff for the second straight day, echoed those statements. I thought he was safe, but obviously New York did not. Also this week, Sean Shuhei Ohtani had his first three-double game in the Dodgers' routes of the Nats. Shuhei Ohtani had three doubles to improve his major league batting average to .371. Rookie London Knack got his first victory, and the Los Angeles Dodgers routed the Washington Nationals 11-2 earlier on Wednesday night. The Dodgers had a season-high 20 hits, their most in a game since they had 24 on May 26, 2022 against the Diamondbacks. Ohtani went 3-for-6, hitting RBI doubles in the 8th and 9th innings. He had three doubles for the first time in his Major League baseball career. He leads the majors in slugging percentage, .695, OPS 1.128, extra base hits 21, doubles 14. He's hitting .429 during his 9-game hitting streak. His average exit velocity on balls he puts in play, he's got to be in a category by himself, David Roberts, Dodgers manager, said. The ball just does different things when it comes off his bat. At night, after ripping a 118.7 miles per hour solo shot in the 9th inning, the hardest hit home run of his career, Ohtani smashed a 115.6 miles per hour double to right center in the first inning off Jake Irvin. Ohtani came around two batters later on Smith's single. Betts pushed the lead to 3-0 in the second on a two-run single against a drawn-in infield. Nick Senzel led off the Nationals' second inning with a homer into the bushes in the visiting bullpen and left. Washington scored again without putting the ball in play, sandwiching two walks around a hit batsman before Joey Meneses pushed in a run with a walk. The Nationals didn't have a base runner after the second inning. Knack, who lost his debut against Washington last week, retired his last 13 batters, struck out 5 over 6 innings. The New York Yankees were hopeful that DJ LeMahieu could make his season debut this week, as early as next week. However, this week those tentative plans were dashed. LeMahieu will be shut down for at least a week, the team said, after being removed from the first game of his rehab assignment. On Tuesday, Yankee manager Aaron Boone said LeMahieu underwent testing Wednesday, was diagnosed with residual edema or recurring swelling in his right foot, which he fractured over a month ago. He'll be reevaluated in 7 days. His timeline to play in major league games is unclear. We'll keep reevaluating week by week, Boone said. LeMahieu, 35, has been sidelined since fouling a pitch off his foot during a spring training game on March 16th. He has been scheduled to play in minor league games Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday before perhaps joining the Yankees in Baltimore next week. He batted first for a double-A Somerset Patriots on Tuesday, striking out to lead off a game. It's tough because DJ is a big part of this team. What we've been doing here this past couple of seasons, Yankee center fielder Aaron Judge said, but the most important thing is getting him healthy, and we roll when we got a healthy DJ. The Bears have unveiled a $5 billion proposal for a new dome lakefront stadium. This would be next door to their current home at Soldier Field as part of a major project that would transform the city's lakefront. They are asking for public funding to help make it happen. The plan calls for $3.2 billion for the new stadium, plus an additional $1.5 billion in infrastructure. The team and the city said the project would add green and open spaces while improving access to the city's museum campus and also including a publicly owned hotel. This is not an easy project, but Chicago doesn't like it easy, Bears President Kevin Warren said. The announcement at Soldier Field comes during a busy week for the Bears. They are expected to take 2022 Heisman Trophy winner as their first pick. The team said last month it was prepared to provide more than $2 billion in funding towards a publicly owned stadium in the city. The proposal calls for $2.025 billion from the Bears, $300 million from an NFL loan, and $900 million in bonds from the Illinois Sports Facilities Authority. The funding from the ISFA would involve extending bonds to the existing 2% hotel tax. The Bears and the project would generate $8 billion in economic impact for the region. It would be built in three phases, and construction would take up to 5 years. The new stadium would be constructed on a parking lot just south of Soldier Field, the Bears' home since 1971. The team's lease runs through 2033. Mayor Brandon Johnson gave a full-throated endorsement, saying the project is in line with Daniel Burnham's 1909 Plan of Chicago. And that concludes the reading of ESPN.com articles this Friday, April 26, 2024. I'm Tom Breed, wishing each of you a good day and a good weekend. Thank you.